Hello, Callum. Thank you so much. I'm glad you could make it this morning, pal. It's going to be really nice. I'm looking forward to recording with you. Okay, Callum. Hello, mate. Callum? Can you hear me? Callum? Callum? Hello. Cal, you...
It was me, Rich. It was me all along.
Hello there, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Football Manager Therapy. I am your host, Rich Owens, and joining me this week, we have two-thirds of the FM team. We have the United City FM, Kev, and we have Jebaroo here too. Kev, how are you doing this morning, pal?
Yeah, good. I mean, it's a Sunday morning. Well, just. And I'm doing all right because we get to podcast. It's good to see you guys. I'm here. I'm good. Let's do this.
Let's absolutely do this, and do this we shall. Jeb, how are you this morning, pal?
Yeah, I'm okay. Sunday morning. Tired as normal. A week off of doing absolutely nothing. Nothing this week. It's great. So yeah, actually had a week off, but yeah, not too bad. Looking forward to going back to work tomorrow.
Good. I'm not. No. The thing is, you have a week off, and yeah. Then you need additional time to recover from the week off.
I think exactly. It's just
government mandated 2 additional recovery days after a holiday, just to, because you spend all the time getting worried about having to go back to work, and then suddenly you're back at work. If you were just given 48 hours just to get all that existential panic out, you'd be fit and raring to go ready on a Wednesday morning. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. Right, when, and then it's a weekend by the time you start, so it's fine.
Oh, there you go. So you're doing exactly
the circle of work. I don't think Elton John sang that.
There's a song in there somewhere.
Exactly.
There is. I think Elton John needs to write it. There you go. So, well, yeah, welcome to this week's podcast. It's less about Football Manager, more just a political manifesto. These are just the things we're going to do when we're in charge. Vote for us, please, and thank you. Look, I'm excited, fellas. We've got lots of lovely things to talk about this morning. Because we made promises last week, if you've listened to last week's episode, which, by the way, loads of you have, so thank you very much. We appreciate you. It's lovely.
We do.
Lovely. Podcast growth makes us happy. It's the validation I'm desperate for, so we appreciate you. If you've listened to last week's episode, you will know that we mentioned that we promised a bit of a roundup of what we've been up to recently in the ever-popular Football Manager Therapy Network Save, which this week we switched it up. We streamed together on Thursday evening. If you've not watched one of the streams yet, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, the three of us are involved in a network game on FM24, started in 23, carried it over to FM24 using the new tools and features that are available in this year's new game. And we got stuck into our fourth season of the Save on Thursday evening. I'm managing Manchester United, Kev is managing Fulham, and Jeb is managing Wolverhampton Wanderers. We have finished our summer transfer window. We've got into the Premier League proper. Some of us have gotten into European competitions. I won't say which ones, but some of us have. And it's well, personally, I think it's going quite well. I mean, Jeb, you finished last season fairly strong. Fourth place Premier League finish for you at the end of season 3. You've had a sneakily good transfer window, I reckon, pal.
Sneakily good. Yeah, I didn't sign Neymar. There was an option to do it, and we got the bid accepted, and they agreed to pay 250k of his wages. But that still wasn't enough for Neymar, so there we are. We never got him in. What a shame. Really, really not going to regret that decision if we did sign him. I'm sure it would have turned out amazing. We would have won everything, but never mind. We had to settle for other players instead. So I think I now have officially wiped out the original Wolverhampton team, apart from Mateus Nunes, who ironically doesn't play for Wolves anymore. So yeah, everyone else has gone. Semedo and Aitnori, I think, were the last two surviving ones. So we made a few signings over the summer. Patrick Schick that we brought in, big, tall striker. We brought in Kyle Walker, I think, who we talked about last week. I nabbed in and got Kyle Walker, so Kev had to get Kyle Walker that we got at home, Kyle Walker Peters. and yeah, so we kind of just built on what we already had. We also signed Sotalo's, I think it's his brother, Bosco Sotalo, we bought in to go alongside Joseph. So that's coming there. And then as we came in, we were after a left back because we just don't get consistency out of Sergio Gomez. He's brilliant on free kicks and corners, but he's not actually that great a left back. So we're playing like three at the back system with wing backs. And Rafael Guerrero or Guerrero, I don't know. he's got an extra E in there. He's just thrown it in just to confuse things. But I'm going to go Guerrero. He's come in. He had an excellent start to the season for us. We played Liverpool in the first game, which is always really, really easy. And we were 2-0 up, which was brilliant. And then we went 3-2 down. And then the last minute, Patrick Schick popped up with his first of the season. We won 4-3. So it was a good start to the season. And Guerrero got two assists in that game. So that worked out quite nicely for us. We also had Tony Cruz on the pitch. He's still there. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of held him around. He's 35. He still can ping a ball, so it's quite nice to see. And yeah, we had a reasonably solid start to the season. We lost 4-1 to Newcastle, which wasn't great, but I'm going to hold off till a little bit later on this, but Champions League came around and we did all right in that.
You did. You absolutely did. I mean, we've all had, well, I know especially Jeb and myself, we've had some particularly tricky opening fixtures, but I mean, you're sat comfortably now on your fourth in the league. After the opening four games, played three, you know, won three, lost one. It's not a terrible start in all things. I mean, what are your expectations for the season from the Wolves board this year? What are they after
you? Europa League, so it's quite easy for me this time around. EFL Cup might be a bit more difficult because we've got Arsenal coming up. I think we've got Arsenal twice this week coming up in the league and then in the League Cup immediately after. So that might be a little bit more difficult. And then I think we got to transfer deadline day and got Schick, we got Araujo, we got who else have we got? Wiper, who we picked up last season, who was really good to start off with. So we're playing three up top anyway. We've got Diego Costa's long gone. Fabio Silva's still there, yeah. So actually, he's an original player that's still there. He's not really played for me because he's been out alone every single season, just how his career is. I think he's had 400 loans since he's been there, so we got him as well. And we just went, oh, look. Eddie Nketiah is available for 10 million, so we picked him up on transfer deadline day, much like we picked up Moussa Dembélé last season. He'll be a bit part player, but he has, I think the one thing that he has over everyone else, he has pace, so it might be something you can bring on those 70-minute marks just to wear out the defenders a little bit more on the opposing team by just running really fast and hopefully scoring some goals.
He is quick. It's interesting. We're having a kind of a little kind of, you know, preamble before we hit the record button, and we loaded at the save, and we just heard Jeff say, yeah, and then assigned Eddie Nketiah on transfer day, and Kev and I both just went, did you?
Did you?
What? When? This season? No, you didn't. And there he is. He's in the Wolves squad. Jeb does sneakily quiet transfers, apart from Neymar, which was, you know.
Yeah, he distracts you with Neymar and then he finds other people. That's the thing.
Yeah. Neymar was the double bluff. But yeah, and then the prize all along was Eddie Nketiah. I think that's a new sentence. I don't think anybody's ever said that before. You did it. You snuck Eddie Nketiah away from Arsenal. He just loves the Midlands. So look, a really solid start from Jeb. On the subject of solid starts, I mean, Kev.
Yes.
You hit incredible form towards the end of season three with your Fulham team. Mm-hmm. Have you built on that?
Seemingly so, Rich. Now, your guess is as good as mine as to exactly how that has come to be, because it befuddles me a little bit, but I'm taking it very happily. But yes, seemingly so. I feel like I identified two or three spots in my squad at the back end of last season that I felt I needed to improve on. And I feel like I might have done that. There's a rumor going around, and it's a vicious, malicious, nasty rumor that I might have been in the top two of spenders in the entirety of Europe this last summer. That can't be right. I mean, it just can't be, for goodness sake. I mean, either PSG or Man City have just decided not to bother or something. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, we've spent quite a bit. And the area of the pitch I felt that I needed the most impact in changing from my squad was more defensively than anything else. So that's where a lot of my money has gone. I bought a new goalkeeper in. He was an expensive goalkeeper. And, you know, we'll see how well he does over the course of a season. But basically, Bernd Leno was aging out a little bit. And I went and got Gavin Bazunu in from Southampton. I rate quite highly. I think he's very consistent with his attributes across the board. But he cost me a lot of money, well over £60 million all in total. But I feel like he was a suitable upgrade on what we had. So he came in. Then I also bought Salisu, Mohamed Salisu from Southampton as well. As Jeb says, I also bought Kyle Walker-Peters from Southampton as well. There's a theme in my transfers, it seems like. I should have just managed Southampton potentially, but I didn't get that chance. So I just went and bought some of their better players anyway. But yeah, I thought that there was some good value in Kyle Walker-Peters. I know it's not Kyle Walker, but I might have my version for a little while longer than Jeb has his, maybe. We'll see. And the final defensive part of my jigsaw was Josko Gvardiol, who I bought in from Leicester. Somebody had bought him into Leicester. Can we remember who that was, Rich, when they were at Leicester? I don't know. There was a manager there.
Didier Deschamps, isn't it?
Probably. Yeah.
I was going to be really nasty and mention, how did Gavin Bazunu's debut go?
Brilliantly. Yeah, brilliantly, yeah, well. Yeah. But it was only like a friendly. Yeah. So we'll take that for now. But yeah, Jeb beat me convincingly in Bazunu's debut and it went really badly. But in the Premier League, seemingly he's decided he can show up until maybe we play Jeb later in the season. Who knows? We'll see what happens there. But yeah, so that was the bulk of my transfers. I also, just bear with me for 2 seconds while I go back a page. I also bought in Alan Velasco from Rich's current club at Man United. Apparently, he was surplus to requirements there. And I think he's a very good, able, rotating option with Sol Bakken on my left-hand side. And I bought in the youngster who I had a little bit of experience with at Chelsea during the early access beta save that we did. Cassaday has come in on loan. I had Hannibal in that kind of position from Man United before, but apparently Man United wanted to use him or something this time around. Hey, Rich. So I didn't get him back again, but I went and got Cassaday instead. Attacking midfield, kind of rotating with the likes of Harrison Reed, for example, in the Fulham setup. So that was the bulk of my transfer dealings. Yes, I spent an awful lot of money. It was just over £200 million. So I am going to have to go some, I think, to actually get the board to suggest that it was a money well invested. But so far, 4-2 against Leeds, 4-1 against Bournemouth, 3-0 against Leicester, 3-0 against Crystal Palace, all in my favour, and putting me at the top of the Premier League after 4 matches. Now, I did have a game in Europe as well, because my 5th place finish was eventually enough to qualify for me for the Champions League, because Chelsea went on a greedy run and won the Premier League and the Champions League last season. So we had a game in there as well against Celta Vigo. Didn't quite go as well as the Premier League one, but it was ultimately a draw that I got there, and not bad for my personal debut in the competition, I felt like. But I feel like, as you've alluded to, the start that you guys have been a little bit more tricky than the start I had in terms of our opposition for the first few fixtures. I felt like I needed to get off to a good start, because I've got Liverpool, Everton, West Ham, Tottenham. I've got Barcelona in there in the Champions League, Chelsea, AC Milan, kind of all coming up in a row. So I needed the points early, and I've got them, which is fantastic. So yeah, I'm an incredibly happy manager at the moment.
And rightly so. I mean, you know, 12 points from your opening 4 games, that's not a terrible start, is it?
I'm
very impressed. I'll be honest with you, Kev. There were some questions from my end on certain aspects of your transfer policy. in as much as spending the better part of £70 million on a goalkeeper from a team that nearly got relegated from the Premier League last season. And one of their defenders and their holding midfielder as well. I'm not 100% sure this is... Are you sure though, Kev? Are you sure? But realistically speaking, I'm not in any position to criticise anybody's transfer windows, because apparently I've signed too many fullbacks. But no, it's been incredible. Absolutely incredible start. And I say, your opening Champions League fixture was a treat. It was a great game for the neutral. Absolutely great game for the neutral.
We probably should have won it, really. I feel like, even though we were away from home, we got a 3-3 draw ultimately, and Moukoko rescued it a little bit for me in the 92nd minute with a third goal. But it just felt like the way the game went, I probably should have done a little bit better with it than we did. But it's the first foray in. Now, as I say, I do have the likes of Barcelona and AC Milan coming up. There are some slightly easier games as well within the section of groups I have, games that I have to play. But yeah, it wasn't the best of starts in the Champions League. I hope it doesn't kind of drift into the Premier League. I've got Middlesbrough coming up next as the first, as the fifth team in that first block of games I was quite happy with. So if I can get a win there before I play the likes of Liverpool and Tottenham and Chelsea and all that lot coming up, hopefully we'll be all right. And by the end of that period, we won't be, you know, too far down the Premier League because we got such a good start.
Well, this is it. Well, what are your objectives, by the way? What's Mr. Khan set you as an objective for the season?
So this is funny. You'll like this one, Rich, right? So at the beginning of the season, Mr. Khan says, Kev, what I really want from you is to record a top half finish in the Premier League. Okay, we finished fifth last season. I would be disappointed if we didn't get that, just in general terms, although I'm not totally convinced I can hit the fifth place again. We will see, but I'm reasonably happy with that. Be competitive in the two cup competitions, which is fine. I can do that. And now there's the funny one, Rich. Okay, so at the beginning of it, he says, what I want you to do, Kev, it's going to be tricky, but what I want you to do is reach the Champions League proper. Okay, so get in that group stage of the Champions League, having qualified from it for it from last season. I went, I will try my very best. And then a news item came up basically telling me what the games that I were going to be playing were in the group stage of the Champions League. And so I'd already achieved it without having to do a thing. And he's now delighted I've already passed it. He was ecstatic over that. Now, what I would say is I've had a couple of dealings with the Khans already in the opening few weeks of the fixtures in the season. Tony blanked me and sent his PA. I'm not happy about that particularly. I would have liked to have seen Tony myself. But yeah, I have achieved my Champions League target. It's probably a good thing because I'm not sure what the games are going to bring when we probably get going into it, but we'll see. But yeah, there we go. Past the target already.
Efficiency. Exactly. For context, in the season, we're still in September. So that just feels like Kev's got a massive leg up straight away. I'd love to be able to sit here and say that all three of us played some European football on a Thursday night, but I didn't because I wasn't technically good enough last season, rescuing an underperforming Manchester United, which some people say is the real victory in this save. I'm the only person that says that, and I say it to myself quite frequently. I do it in different voices, so it sounds like it's coming from different people, which is very, very kind. Jeb, how did your European campaign start? Because I know, again, you're in the Champions League proper, your first crack at it, you know, similar experience to Kev, you know, grinding out a tricky result away from home.
I think me and Kev had the same issue with the registration. We clicked on it, and I think we both had the same thing, and it might be a bug that... It's not a bug, I guess, but it's something that a Football Manager needs to fix.
Miles.
Something to fix is if you put one of your players in the under-21 squad, it says under-21 next to his name. So I clicked on all the people, went, yep, everyone's fine. Clicked on. I did put two of like players in the Champions League squad. They weren't very happy about it. Rendell Correa in particular, who scares various wingers when he plays against them because he's so big and strong. He has got something like 17 or 18 strength. So is quite scary. So he was very angry. He knocked on my door. He ripped my door off the hinges and came in and went, "Why am I in the squad?" And went, "Oh, sorry, it's just an admin error, my mistake." And he was just like, "I'm not happy about it." And then 21 people agreed with him in the squad. I was like, "God, no, not this again." It was just like, and to be fair, it was all they did. I just went into the team meeting and went, "Soz." And they went, "Oh yeah, fine, thanks, nice one, really nice of you, apologise for that." And then he played against Brentford in the league, and he scored a goal as you imagine he would score a goal, by smashing it into the top corner from outside the box, and got a couple of assists. So he's like, "There you go, you can play in the league plenty." And then we finally got round to the Champions League game, our debut against Galatasaray. Did all right, yeah, 6-0. We're top of the Champions League. I think that's how you read it, don't you, with that league phase. We have got a horrible draw. Like, we've not been given, like, I don't think we've really been given an easy game. I think Olympiacos is probably the easiest game we've got. We've got Benfica, Man City, we've got Basel, I guess, are a little bit easier. And then we've got Juventus and Atletico Madrid to finish it off as well. So I think if we start strong and continue that onwards, should be all right. Like I said, I think we are just going to be that team that's just going to score a lot of goals this season. We scored 11 in two games, and between Thuram and Mateus Nunes in the middle of the park, they're both just really, really loving the centre midfield on attack role. So Thuram got a hat-trick in that game. So yeah, 6-0. I think we did all right, and I think the board were quite happy with that. So I'm on a B-.
I'd kill for a B-. I can't get above C+, but then again, I'm underperforming, so that might be for why.
It did bring up something, actually, Rich, that I'd forgotten a little bit about myself on the registration front. So I also had to take out two of my first team members of my squad from my Champions League squad, a left-back called Valerie, and also a winger, Dil Russen, didn't make the cut, just because my imbalance in homegrown talent in the squad, etc. So I also went through the meetings to discuss that with them, and said, you know, I'm sorry, you're playing the league, etc. And Jeb's lot were fine, and mine kind of weren't. They weren't overly impressed by that. They're still sulking in a corner somewhere. I will have to get them some game time. I'm sure it will all be fine. Or I might have to sell them in January. Who knows? But we'll see what happens with that one. But yeah, they weren't overly impressed. The only other issue that I now recall is originally I bought Gvardiol into my squad to play as a centre-back. I thought him and Salisu rotating in that kind of role would be very, very strong, with Omobamadeli as the right-sided of the two. And then I looked at them and I thought, can I put both of those in as two left-footeds in the centre of my midfield, my central defence, sorry. And I question whether I wanted to do that for balance. What I decided upon, actually, was I was playing an inverted fullback on the right-hand side last season. And I decided if I switch it to the left-hand side and free up Kyle Walker-Peters on the right-hand side to be a bit more roaming, I could play Gvardiol as a defensive fullback and play him as the inverted fullback on the left-hand side, and everybody will be happy. Turns out not everybody's going to be happy with that, because I'd unfortunately made a promise to Gvardiol in the contract negotiations that I'd play him in his preferred position, which is central defender. So for how long he's going to be happy playing on the left-hand side, I don't know. I will play him there, I think, on key games. But what I'm experimenting with is whether Salisu can play out there as the inverted fullback instead, because he's got no promises. We'll see how that goes, but it might mean a reshape. But just at the point where I got 4 wins out of 4 and everything was great, I discovered maybe I'm going to have to change my back line a little bit. Not impressed by that, but that was past Kev sticking it to future Kev, I think. But there we go.
This is a problem for later. A problem for me, but a problem for later. It's a great policy. It's a great policy to have. It's one that I use daily, not just in the context of Football Manager. I hate future Rich, and he's going to suffer at my hand. I've done a kind of similar thing to you, I suppose, Kev, in terms of reshapes, but I've committed to it early. Because this season for me at United is pretty, it's all or nothing, basically. I did what I had to do last season, which was, well, originally they just wanted keeping up, and then they want to top our finish, but there were, you know, two different screens that were telling me two different objectives, but I met them both anyway because I'm consistent. This season they have said it's European football or you're toast. You know, they've just said, you know, Europa. They've not said Champions League. They've said definitely Europa. Now, I know, Jeb, you're in a position with Wolves where, as you say, you've, with the exception of maybe a couple of players, you've now got a completely different team. The United team, I did a bit of a count on Thursday night. I think there are still 11 players in this United team that were there at the start of the save. And of those 11, not very many of them are actually good at football, which is proving to be a little bit of an issue for me. I was looking at what I had, and I've been playing a variation of like a 4-2-3-1 for pretty much the whole save. It worked really, really well at Leicester. It occasionally worked really, really well at United. But last season, we were inconsistent, and I don't know if that's because the players weren't up to scratch or what, but we were conceding a lot of goals, especially towards the end of the season. And I was like, well, that's what really needs fixing. We should maybe rework the system, rework the shape of the team, and switch from a 4-5 at the back, which is what I decided to do. But unfortunately, I made that decision 3/4 of the way through the transfer window. I'd already spent money on players in other positions that, as it turns out, I didn't really need as much with the change of formation. So that was a bit of a worry. A couple of weeks ago, I spent £46 million on Caleb Okoli from Atalanta, who is very, very, very good. You know, we are 3 years into the save. Oh, sorry, 4 years into the save at this point. You know, he is phenomenally good. He is absolutely magnificent. He's best suited to playing as like a wide centre-back, but I don't, even though he's on the right of a back three, wide centre-backs I've had bad experiences with last year, so I'll kind of keep him as like a ball-playing defender. But he's been fantastic. I was like, I'm still lacking a little bit of depth. I've got a very old Rafa Varane, who's probably only got one season left in him because he's told me he is desperate to go, but nobody's bid for him. I've got Lissandro Martinez, who now I'm playing three at the back, might get some minutes. He was on the chopping block beforehand, but he might stay. I'd signed a Sven Botman for £11 million, and Sven Botman's fine. I was like, I need more centre-back depth. I don't really have a strong back three, especially if I start picking up injuries. So I switched to this back three, and I was like, what do I need? Somebody that can play the left side of a back three. Who should I sign? Apparently, I've signed a fullback. According to my colleagues, I've signed a fullback. I've signed Calvin Shirley-Bassey from Ajax because he's really, really, really fast. And if there's one thing that I like, it's players that are really, really, really fast. I've gone for the Rendell Correa approach as well, because apparently wingers find physically strong players that can play out wide defensively intimidating. And when it comes to his physicals, they are something quite special. He's got 18 strength. He's 6'1" and technically is a left back. So fingers crossed, wingers that see him are just going to panic and maybe just turn around and run in the opposite direction. That would be nice. So Shirley-Bassey's come in. He's been absolutely fantastic. Obviously, Alexander Nubel came in on a free over the summer because I needed a bit of depth in terms of my goalkeepers. I've kept David De Gea for one more year, and I do have an optional extension in his contract again, so I might keep him again, just because he's started the season really well. Gio Lo Celso came in on a free from Spurs, and he's good because he can play anywhere from central midfield all the way up to striker. So that helps. I've signed the Danilo that's actually at Nottingham Forest in real life because he is on paper the best central midfielder that I have at the club. I was trying to get rid of Casemiro a few weeks ago, and eventually he's gone to Chelsea for £17 million. And I was like, how are you going to replace him? I'm like, with a player a decade younger than him who's got better attributes in every single area. And the squad have gone, well, that's fair enough. Yeah, okay. Well, that's not a problem. You can do that. You're allowed to do that. So he's been great. He's been really, really good. In terms of my goalkeeping situation, Alexander Nubel's come in as backup to David De Gea. I had another goalkeeper, my third choice keeper, Matej Kovar. He's there. He's 25 years old. He's a Czech goalkeeper that's average at best. I was having issues with work permits. They're like, oh, if he's not going to get a work permit if he signs a new deal. Signed him to a new deal anyway. Sent him out on loan. And then I'm thinking to myself, actually, I do need a third goalkeeper because FM24, the frequency of goalkeeper injuries has been fairly high, especially for people found that out during early access. And I was like, if De Gea gets an injury, then it's just Alexander Noble. I don't have any vaguely competent goalkeepers in the under-21s or the under-18s. They all seem to be they're suffering from the medical condition known as Dorito mitts. I'm not convinced a lot of them have hands. So I've done what Kev's done. I've gone back and raided Leicester City for arguably the best goalkeeper in the game. It's not the one that scored against me from... No, it's not that one. Not that one. No, no, I wouldn't...
Now, that's a debate I think I can win. But okay, go for it. Carry on.
Yeah, he's good.
Still rig it.
I'd still rig the whole thing. I put the mock into democracy. I've signed Jack Butland. I've signed Jack Butland for £2 million from Leicester City. He would have gone for less, but I was like, I love him so much. I'm willing to pay over the odds. So write down any number you want on this scrap of paper and I will give it to you instantly. So £2 million for Jack Butland, who realistically speaking will not kick a football for me at any point this season. But I've got to say, the tactical decisions that I've made and the transfer that I made have worked really, really well. I've gone from struggling last season to starting quite well this. And in terms of my start, I was panicking. I was panicking. There was a point on Thursday where I think just before I joined the voice call with the two of you, when we were streaming, I was saying to the chat when I was introducing the save, realistically speaking, I could find myself in a position where I'm sacked by November because they want European football. And my opening Premier League fixtures were Aston Villa, who are not bad at all. They've got a very, very, very nice squad, especially in this save. And then Arsenal away from home, Chelsea away from home, Manchester City at home, and then Tottenham Hotspur. I'm like, that is not a particularly nice opening run of fixtures, if I'm brutally honest with you. I don't want to, could I not? But they said I had to. Aston Villa, we beat 2-0 at home on the opening day. A very, very competent performance. Everybody played brilliantly. Very, very happy. A 3-3 draw away from home at Arsenal with the new boy Danilo scoring a 96th-minute equaliser, which I was quite happy with, I'm going to be brutally honest. In a game that Arsenal dominated me in. Like Arsenal, see, I don't know if it's the early access Chelsea save coming back to haunt me because Arsenal pummeled me four times in that save. They seem to be carrying it on into the network save. Arsenal absolutely tore me apart. And it was a very, very, I was delighted with the 3-3, but Arsenal genuinely deserved to beat me, just tore me apart. And then we went to Stamford Bridge to play Chelsea, smashed them 4-0, absolutely delighted. Limbs, as the kid would say, limbs everywhere. And then in the final game of the stream, we had Manchester City at home. And it's Manchester City. You know, they're just really good, as it turns out, very much like in real life. They're very, very good on Football Manager as well. Battered them 3-0 at Old Trafford. They didn't get a look in. It was, honestly, I've never seen a performance like it against one of the big teams. So four games into the season, I'm second in the league. Just sat 2 points behind Kev's Fulham. There was a really, really nice moment on Thursday night where Fulham, United and Wolves were the top three teams in the Premier League. It didn't last for very long because I think Newcastle scored some goals and they kind of in third at the moment between us. But we've all had a pretty good start, if I'm honest with you. And there were talks of maybe leaving Jeb's computer on for the next week just so we didn't have to turn off the save because we all know that we're going to come back to it. And it's going to be a very different experience for us next time. Well, you'd hope it wouldn't be, but it's just the way that FM works. It's just the way it works. Miles is sat there somewhere and he's pressed the nonsense button for the FMT network save because it's gone offline and he's loaded back up next time. Craziness everywhere. But it's been a cracking start. I'm looking at some of the, like if you look at all the metrics that they measure the ability in at the moment, the three assist leaders in the Premier League. There's Harrison Reed at Fulham with 5, Bruno Fernandes at United with 4, and then Abada's got 3 at Wolves, so they're the top three there. Gavin Bazunu has kept two clean sheets in the opening four, which, you know, the Gavin Bazunu redemption song is being played in the background. Somehow, David De Gea has kept three. I've got no idea how either, but he's done it. Right. João Palhinha has got two Man of the Match awards, and so is a guy called Ergakan, who plays in goal for Leicester, which I just don't believe. He's probably scored a hat-trick in both games, hasn't he? Like, everybody has started really, really well. And this feels like it kind of could be the season that somebody's competing for a title. I'm going to say it early. It feels like there's going to be a pretty strong title race this year.
I've already won one cup, so, you know, might as well add to the other.
The most prestigious of all the cups.
Exactly.
It really is. Ironically, the players are really fired up for it next year as well. You know, is it next year, though? Is it accurate? Is it the Y Callum has just had a baby cup? Because it's,
that's what it's going to be called.
It's just going to be called that forever. So what you're saying is that Callum and Y-Wife are going to have a baby every single year for the duration of this network save. Just so that
it's not every single year, is it? Because we'll get through it a little bit quicker. So get to work, Callum. Hurry up.
Yeah.
Crack on. If there's, in my experience, if there's one thing that, you know, couples that have just had their first child set as a priority, it's having that second child.
Yes.
Honestly. Yeah, let's just go. Let's just, you know, smash more.
Time's ticking.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Clock's ticking. It's time. Callum, you don't have to do that. But again, just for consistency in the context of the save, help us out, I suppose, is what we're trying to say here. Look, it's been brilliant fun. And I think that the plan is we're continuing this week, this Thursday again.
Wednesday.
We're doing Wednesday.
Sorry. That's correct. Yes. Wednesday this week.
I'm just going domestically
international. So, yes.
Yeah. It was just that November thing of if we can find a night to do it, then we're going to take it. But hopefully, at some point in the not too distant future, we'll revert back to our normal Monday and be consistent for a little while there. But yeah, just for now, it's more important for us to keep it going rather than just missing out stuff, I think.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. This is true. So Wednesday this week. Wednesday, so if you're listening to this week on Patreon, you've got 2 days to prepare yourselves emotionally. If you're listening to this public release on Tuesday, tomorrow night, we're going to stream the network save. Please come and spend the evening with us because it's quite good fun. There we go. It's good. Come and spend time. And we said this afterwards, like, do a network save with your pals. Mm. Do it. I was sat there on Thursday after we finished the stream. And I was having a little something to eat. And I was like, I've just had a really brilliant night hanging out with my friends. I've just really, really enjoyed it. It's been so much fun. So do it. Get your own network save. Make choices. Make friends. Have a good time.
Are you having something to eat? Are you having a bit of lunch?
Big bit of lunch?
Yeah.
Nice big bit of lunch. Carlton Palmer phoned me and told me I had to do it.
Okay, Carlton.
I'll do it. You know, it's just appeasing him at this point. He's got no way of checking up to make sure I did it, but you know, I don't like to lie.
He's an avid listener of the podcast, Rich. Of course, he is.
He loves the podcast.
He's going to find out.
He is going to find out. He did say in his message that, you know, look, I've heard you got a podcast. You know, I'd love to come on as a guest, and I'm sure it won't come up if he ever does. We'll just keep playing the clip in the background and see if he notices. I'm going to be brutally honest. I don't think he would. I don't think he would at all. Oh, there's another Carlton Palmer. That's weird. What's he doing here? What are the chances? Should we address the elephant in the room? Like the results of apparently the very corrupt poll that was put out on the internet?
Yes, please. I think possibly it's an absolute disgrace. God.
Well, maybe. Yeah. Look, we put the poll out. It went up on Twitter.
What was the poll out about, Rich? Come on.
Well, the poll was it was the debate that we had last week, Kev. There was a strong, spirited debate from both of us in the context of who was the better signing and who was what was the better option in terms of our broken Chelsea challenge. Mm-hmm. Was it keeping Lukaku? Or was it getting rid of Lukaku and bringing in Victor Osimhen?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think which I think was communicated very, very well in the way that the poll was phrased on Twitter.
Right. Who's better, Romelu Lukaku or Victor Osimhen? Who's better? No. Who's better in FM24, it
says,
guys?
Who's the better signing on FM24? Osimhen
better
sign.
Yeah, but you're not signing Lukaku, who's already there.
Well, technically, somebody signed him. Signed him. It's impossible to remember which Chelsea manager did, but he is there, and technically he is a signing. He counts in a roundabout kind of way. As it turns out, 72% of the people agreed that it was Victor Osimhen. So I don't know. I don't know what to say. We put one up on Spotify as well. It went up on Spotify. Sometimes there are polls on the audio upload. Should we check the results of that one as well?
Did you put any evidence with it, by the way? Did you put any of the screenshots from people's seasons like as reference or anything like that?
No.
Any facts? Did you put any facts out there? No, you didn't, did you? You didn't even put a fax out there, did you? No? Did you send a fax to anybody? No.
We're finally getting a glimpse behind the curtain of this dictatorship that is FMT. That's what we're getting.
Listen, the fact that I'm holding a hammer during this podcast is completely unrelated, okay? I just like to have something to hold when I'm recording. It makes me feel safe. Look, even the Spotify poll, which was titled Who Won the Debate, Rich or Kev, was 57% in favour of me. So again, I don't know how much more evidence you need apart from there being two separate polls asking who won the debate, technically, and me and Victor Osimhen winning both. What more do you need?
Well,
you
can, dodge.
You can actually, as a person who mediated the debate, Kev won. There you go. Done.
Thank you.
That's all I needed.
It's a split decision. It's a draw. There you go.
You know full well, Rich, is in my contract. I am not allowed to lose debates. Come on.
It's true. Call it a tie. We'll call it a tie. Don't let
you
the
call
percentages...
it anything you like.
Don't let the percentages and the numbers and the evidence of me winning stand in the way of me winning. Okay, we don't have to do that, and that's okay. That's fine. if that's what it takes to keep the train on the tracks, that's what I'm willing to admit that maybe I didn't. No, I did. I phrased everything fine. Everything
we've
was
so seed. Now he's
oh, they really himself. Have. They really have. Because again, here's an exciting look behind the curtain for me as well. If somebody tells me I've done something wrong in any context, I don't even question it. I just apologize and say sorry. It's a curse. I do it. I do it in the context of podcasting, streaming, at work. I do it all the time. It's brilliant. I had an email from my manager at work this week, and I didn't even read the email, but I just started writing an email back to them apologizing for having not done something. Didn't even have to. It was telling me I'd done something right, and I'm still like, oh, sorry about that. It's probably made life worse in other ways. It's just who I am as a person. I'm a panicker.
Osimhen's
good. Yes, you can, please.
Can I just intersect? It was something that we talked about last week, and it's gotten out of control, and it's partly down to me.
Go for it.
And then it's also partly down to the viewers of my streams and stuff. So I said I was going on about doing this bucket list and this tick list that you want to do and save.
Yes.
So I've got my tick list, and I'll just bring it up here. How many objectives do you think I put on there? They're actually called obj now. Well, it's the obj list. But yeah, okay. How many do you think I've got on there?
We came up with what, like two or three last week?
Yeah.
It's probably I know how interactive our viewers are at times, so probably another couple, I would imagine, from away from a stream, maybe two or three whilst on the stream. So what, like seven or eight, something like that?
Yeah.
I was going to go ever slightly higher. I was going to go for an even 10. Because, you know, if you look at the context of the save and what one club save, 10 different objectives seems about right.
Yeah, 124. That's how many I've got.
What?
120? How have you got? No.
Yeah.
What?
It's progressing things going along. So it's like selling a player for $250,000, then $500,000, then $1 million. Yeah. You progress up that way. But then you've got to buy those players so that there's another like complete set of objectives that way. And it just kept on getting bigger and bigger. And then I was just like, this has gone too far. We've completed two of them, though. We got to the EFL second round. We were bigger than Barrow when the game started. So there we are.
You've got, hang on. You've got over 120 objectives.
Yep.
Is one of them like stand in the technical area and then another one sit in the technical area? Or how have you got 120?
It's just like, I do like some of them I have to like go back and verify what we'd actually typed, because one of them just says, become an ass man for Morphin. But that's obviously assistant manager, not Billy Gunn.
How is this 6 months? Yeah, we've done this.
So yeah, I'll give you the link to put in the description, because I'm going to leave it public so people can see how we're getting on, and I'll put it in the Discord as well. But yeah, I think it's still going to grow because there's all those extra things.
Anymore.
Well, it's all those extra things that you grow on. So it's like having somebody get player of the month, young player of the month. Then they get, let's say, a young player goes into next gen. Yeah? Then he becomes the European golden boy. Then he becomes young player. I've not got young player of the year in here. Oh, God, I've had another one. 125 now. So yeah, it's that type of progression. And like, even just like somebody was going on, or like have a child in the game, have a player come out as gay. I was just like, is that an objective you should have? I'm not sure, but yeah.
I need to see this list. I'm convinced half of them are going to be play the 12th match, play the 13th match, play the 14th
no,
match.
Exactly.
No. Sign a player from Afghanistan. Sign a player from Albania. Sign a player from Algeria. God, there are a few of these, aren't there? Exactly. My goodness. Yeah.
Nope, nothing like that as well.
Wow. Yeah. Well, okay.
That's...
I can barely cope with playing Football Manager whilst talking to people on a chat, let alone figuring out 120-odd objectives as well.
Yeah, my favourite thing is when a ticket, the whole thing goes green. It's like, ooh. Yeah. And my next thing is I'm going to build it into my little graphic thing. So when a ticket, it goes onto a list, and then I can display the list. I'm like, this is what we've done.
Nice.
We've got an ass man.
Nice.
Yes. Play a match using director camera. Play a match using TV camera. Play a match from the RDF blimp camera. It just goes on. Oh, fantastic.
Wow.
Look,
wow.
Realistically speaking, cards on the table, how many of these do you think you're going to be able to tick off in the next, you know, bearing in mind we've still got 11 and a half months for you.
I think a lot of them I could tick off. That's the thing. It's how the saves go along. I've not gone, we need to win League Two. It's like, you need to get promoted from League Two. I'm not going to go, yeah, win League Two via the playoffs. Win League Two outright. Finish second in League Two and get that certificate. Goes, well done, you finished in second place. You don't get anything for it. No, not gone that far. But yeah, so it's a promotion. And then it's like working your way through the rounds in the various cups. There's no European cups on there currently. So there's definitely like another... I don't know how that works anymore, so I'll have to figure out how to tick them off. But yeah, I think a lot of them can be ticked off. Like I said, it makes sense when you see the list. It was just when I looked at it, I was like, God, I've created a beast. Which, there we go, narrative done.
This is it. I said 10, and I thought, oh, maybe 10's a bit too high.
Yeah.
Maybe it's, oh, well, there's 12. Still quite close. 124, though. That's bonk. Look, all I'm saying is that there was a time when Tony and I were discussing the idea of his British Steel Challenge, and he had the idea towards the tail end of FM22. And I remember him messaging me and saying, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And we did the maths. And I was like, if you're going to do it this year, Tony, and finish the challenge, you have to win a trophy every 2.5 streams. And he was like, okay, we'll save it. Like, you're going to have to complete like 7 objectives every stream, because the list is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like, oh God, I've not qualified for Europe, and we're still only in December in real life. Oh, but no, I think you'd do brilliantly. I'm genuinely looking forward to it. And I'm really looking forward to the hearing how many new objectives are added every stream.
Yeah.
Because people aren't going to stop. People aren't going to stop.
Now you've opened a can of worms.
I also don't have an objective for get Marco van Basten as your director of football. But I'm not going to go any further than that. Let's go to the next topic.
Oh, good. Good. Sign a set piece coach who has over 7 in set piece training.
Who's
got over 8.
Yeah.
Have a team of new gens that
too
don't
soon
all
that,
have double-barrel surnames.
Too soon.
Too soon. too soon.
It's a brand new season in the network save, and there's still no set piece coaches because you two nicked the two that were good. That's all I'm saying. Move on.
You say nick the two that were good, nick the two that existed.
Yeah.
Exactly. Justice for Hulick and Smallwood. That's all we can hope for. That's all we can really, really hope for. He's going to get passed around all of us every 6 months. He's just going to be on shifts. Like a locum doctor. It's going to be great. I think we should probably take a few minutes here, guys, because it's nice to kind of sit back and reflect on how correct we are about certain things from time to time, because every now and then we do say things that are correct, you know?
I don't remember the last time, but okay.
It wasn't that long ago, as it turns out, because if you remember, a few months ago, just before the start of the Premier League season, in real life, we recorded some predictions on this podcast of what we thought was potentially going to happen over the course of the season. Mm-hmm. And as we are now, we're pretty much a third of the way through the Premier League season. And I thought it'd be nice just to take a few moments to reflect on maybe some of the things that we said and see how we're doing in terms of what we thought was going to happen.
Okay, remind me what we said.
Well, as it turns out, in terms of teams that are doing quite well and teams that might not be doing quite well, most of us were pretty correct. I think we made predictions for a top three, and we also made predictions for top four, and we also made predictions for a bottom three. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of our bottom three predictions, I think all three of us went for Sheffield United and Luton. I think we all kind of said at the start of the season, just didn't necessarily see it working for them. And as it turns out, we were all very, very correct in that capacity. I had Nottingham Forest pegged for the drop. I think I'm wrong, to be brutally honest with you. I think I'm incorrect. And that's not because Nottingham Forest aren't necessarily playing well enough to stay up. It's that you've got, you know, Luton, Sheffield United, and also Burnley, who I thought were going to be okay. I think Burnley and Nottingham Forest have kind of switched in terms of their performances there. So I'm feeling very smug about that. Two out of three were correct. I might have also made some claims about whichever team signed Moscardo were going to finish in the top four in the Premier League. And I can't remember who signed him, so it's probably not worth diving too deep into that one. You know, it's
fair.
Did Liverpool sign him there in the top four at the moment? I feel like they must have done. I feel like they must have done.
They went for about 15 defensive midfielders, so I'm sure they got one off them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we got Endo. We're always after Endo. So
you are always after Endo. Always after him, who everybody was like, oh my God, I've been watching this man play for years. I've heard he's really, really good in certain things.
You had him at Stuttgart and you thought it was amazing. So, yeah.
I did quite like him at Stuttgart, actually. I did. I definitely didn't sell him after one season because he was 30 and I thought, oh, he's far too old. Can't be doing with that. He was straight out the door, him and Silas. But I'm feeling quite smug about that. We made some predictions about top goal scorers as well. Well, technically, second place.
Yeah, I was going to say second place goal scorers.
Yeah.
Really.
Who was going to finish second in the golden boot race after Erling Haaland is realistically the question, isn't it? And again, some of us have been very, very correct. I said not Mo Salah. I definitely didn't say Mo Salah. I said Heung-min Son. And he's currently sat joint second in the golden boot race.
Nice. You have to say Martial.
I'm almost confident that Kev said Anthony Martial this was going to be his breakout season.
I think I got it wrong. Sorry, it's not Anthony. It's Ivan Tony. That's who he went really, really bold and went. Ivan Tony's back in January. He's just going to score 40 goals.
He's going to have a great February. Yeah.
As a Man United fan, if I'd have said the entire forward line of Man United, I still wouldn't be at the top of the table with it, would I? So, you know, Anthony Martial didn't have a chance. Well, maybe.
Exactly. Defensively, apparently not as terrible. To the point that, Kev, what was it you told us before we started recording the podcast that made us all question our sanity?
Yeah. I'm having an existential crisis this season with Man United. They've been dreadful, haven't they? Everybody knows they've been dreadful. It's been a topic of conversation for the last few weeks, really, as to what the causes of the problems at Man United are. There is currently an informed team in the Premier League out of the last five fixtures. And I asked you to name who it was. Tell me who you two guessed.
I went with Everton. It just seemed like it would surprise me, but also make enough sense to be correct. That was my mm-hmm. logic.
Yeah, I think Jeb did the same, didn't you, Jeb? Everton was your guest. Is Man United, how has that happened? In the last five games, apparently we've won four in the Premier League, and we're an informed side. Yeah, I'm sitting here. Every Monday, I come onto a live stream, and my entire chat was going, ha, United are useless, aren't they? Tell me what you think about United, because they're really bad. Go on, tell me all about how bad your weekend. Every weekend, it feels like I've been doing this all season. We're the informed side in the Premier League. What? How has this happened?
It doesn't make any sense. It does not make any sense. Oh. I think my judgment is being clouded by other competitions that United are playing in. That's what's true. Doing it for me. Yeah. You know, the Copenhagen game midweek, some lad called Rooney Bargy.
I've never heard of him.
You'd think people would, because apparently he might be a bit good on Football Manager, but who's to say, you know? And then obviously the Newcastle game in the Carabao the week before, like those are the ones that stick out. It's like, no, they've just been quietly winning games in the Premier League. Not particularly, you know, not exciting games.
True.
But they're still winning games, which is very, very strange.
So weird anyway. Anyway, top goal scorers, you went for...
I went for Heung-min Son, yes.
And he's doing all right. What about the other two? Let's check in with those. I think I went for Isak, didn't I? Potentially.
I think you did. Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did.
I think
you
made he's up there a bit, but he's not like right up there.
He's currently sixth. Mm-hmm. So he's the joint sixth.
Maybe Callum Wilson got the same number of goals, don't they?
Wilson's joint fourth. I mean, at this point in the season, the players in joint sixth are the ones you'd all obviously expect to be there. In joint sixth with six goals each. Obviously, Isak, very, very good striker. The best striker in the world, according to our current network save, Dominic Solanke. he's hit six already this season. Mm-hmm. Brian Mbeumo from Brentford.
Yep,
which again makes complete sense. And in the words of Pep Guardiola, the other Korean player in the Premier League, Hwang Hee-chan, six goals already this season. And it's only in November.
I was going to say lots of network save lore there. So.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Jeb called it early. He's like, he knew he was going to perform. And in the end,
he was too powerful for.
He was too good.
Yeah,
had to let him go to Brighton just to try and help them. He was couldn't handle the power.
He played 14 games in three seasons for Brighton. Just have a look at his history, and he didn't score. He's not scored for 5 years.
He's been saving all up.
He's saving them all up back to back. Yeah, hat tricks like 17 games in a row. You watch. You watch. It could happen. We all made some pretty bold predictions. Kev.
Yes.
You made the boldest prediction of all, didn't you?
I did.
And I think there's no easy way. We laughed at you.
Yeah.
We laughed. We went, what a daft, what a lovely thing to say, but what a massively unrealistic thing to say. Mm-hmm. And your crazy prediction so far has come true, mate.
Yes, well, we know that the Premier League is an absolute madness and chaotic at the best of times. So anything can change at any point. But my prediction was, what if, and bear with me on this one, what if no Premier League manager this season got the sack? So far, I think it's working out quite well for me. And the thought that I had at the beginning of it was there are certain clubs that you would expect to struggle a little bit. That we've talked a little bit about Sheffield United, Luton, etc. Would you really sack the manager if they did? Because I don't really think it's their fault. Now, I think this quite often in the Premier League, what is the expectation of these people that are making these decisions? And sometimes they're a bit skewy and they make weird choices about what they do. But I looked through the Premier League and I thought, if everybody performs roughly to what they're expected to do, why would any of them get sacked? Now, one is going to, At some point, one is going to. Ask me again in February. I'm sure three of them would have gone by then or something. But at the moment, it's not looking bad, is it, really?
It really isn't. I mean, you make a very, very valid point. I think a lot of the time, you'll see managers getting sacked, not just across, not just limited to the Premier League, like to all levels of football, where a very, very brief poor run of form and the manager's just gone. But the question is never, it might be a poor run of results in terms of, you know, looking at it on a sheet of paper. Well, this team has lost six games out of their last 10. And they go, oh, that's terrible. But was that team expected to win?
Yep.
Were they expected to win more than two or three games in that run regardless? And I think one of the things that seems to be lacking a lot when it comes to managerial sacking decisions in terms of football is context. I think context is vitally important. You know, I think if you look at the three teams that are currently in the relegation zone in the Premier League, for example, you could make the compelling argument that Luton weren't expecting to stay up. Mm-hmm. This season, you know, it was an incredible achievement for them to get to the Premier League, but surviving was probably never on the agenda. You know, yeah. it's that classic board FM board objective on FM. You know, battle bravely against relegation, but your probs going down, lads. You know, Sheffield United as well. You know, this isn't Sheffield based bias. But Sheffield United weren't strong enough. And realistically speaking, the expectation from the fans isn't going to be, oh, yeah, we're definitely going to stay up. Mm-hmm. Burnley, there might be a bit of wiggle room there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, the expectations are they have recently been a fairly well-established Premier League side. And, you know, they've gone down and come back up again very, very quickly. They might have had a better chance at it than the other two that are currently down there. But if Sheffield United get relegated, if Luton get relegated, it's not really a sackable offence, I suppose, when you actually look at the grand scheme of things. No. Like if Manchester City finished 14th this season, then you'd be like, well, actually, you know, expectations would be significantly higher and you would probably at that point expect the manager to, you know, because the objective there is obviously, they're going to be competing for another treble. And
mm-hmm.
they have the squad to do it. They have the players. They have the capability. So that would be the expectation from the club. But you would expect a sacking there. But if City finished third in the league, you wouldn't expect Guardiola to go. If, you know, it's context is vitally important, I think. And it's one of the things that I think is overlooked enormously in these yep. situations.
So we'll see. But you never know.
We'll see. Exactly. I'm cautiously optimistic. I really, really hope that we get to May and we're just sat here again together like, well, that who put the bet on? Who went? Who went to Ladbrokes and went, right, I've got a tenner here that says no manager get. I reckon the odds would be astronomical, wouldn't you? Like if you actually went
to imagine
like,
so.
no Premier League sackings in terms of managers this season. I think you're talking Leicester City winning the league odds there, surely. Quite fabulous. Right. Yeah. Right now, we're getting towards the end of our podcast for today.
Ooh.
Getting to
I predicted Eddie Howe's going to get sacked.
Oh, you did, didn't you?
And you started to unravel a bit for Club Saudi Arabia, Newcastle United. Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know how you were yesterday or how. Of a certain former host of the podcast were when Dominic Solanke scored two goals against them to win. I mean, it did keep probably Ariel in the job. Like Eric Ten Hag winning probably kept him safe for at least a few more months. Come on. Mm-hmm. Right. yeah, so it might unravel. I think their board expectations might be too far for him. But we'll see.
Mm-hmm. We will. We absolutely will. This is the thing, isn't it? You know, they're competing in Europe as well now. They're competing in the Champions League, and you know, Champions League and Premier League campaigns at the same time aren't always the easiest thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you never know.
Ask me about that in my Fulham team in the network save in a couple of months in game from now.
This is it. this is it. Although one of the best things to happen as a result of Newcastle's Champions League campaign this season, this got shared with me at work this week, because part of my job is I work with the attendance team at the school that I work at. So we have to be accountable for the location of, at my school, it's roughly 1,250 kids every single day, which is a lot of kids. And making sure that they are all present and accounted for is tricky. And there were some things that were being sent round by, I think, you know, it kind of got picked up by a school and then got picked up by other schools and other schools. It was a thing on Twitter where a parent had been screenshotted a text message that they'd been sent from their child's school, basically saying, just so you are aware, we are unauthorizing the absences for your daughter from this week after you and your family were seen in the fan area of a certain European football club in Germany on a Champions League away night. So yeah, the family from Newcastle are called up. They've got tickets for the Newcastle Dortmund game in Germany. They'd phoned up the school. Oh, we've all got this sickness bug that's going around school. Like, oh, okay, then that's fine. You rest up. And then they got caught on the fan cams and the telly and the school. Wow. Like, yeah, we've seen you in Germany. We know you're not poorly. And I was, oh, that's nice. That's a nice little touch. I did enjoy that. So that got shared by quite a few people. Like, this is a good Twitter post. You're going to enjoy this. And they were right. I did enjoy it. It was very, very good. It was a good time. Good time to have my
nice.
It's just some of the fun we have at work. It's just a good time. It's a happy, positive work environment. Speaking of happy and positive, mm-hmm. I'm about to make you both not soz, because I've got to end this week's podcast, because we're getting towards the end of proceedings. I've got a little quiz question for you both.
Okay.
I like quizzes, but I mean, I usually delve them out, yeah.
I love them.
You love them so. Yeah. Look, I thought it'd be a little bit of fun. This is kind of, it's kind of in honor, I suppose, in honor of mm-hmm. Our early access save, our broken Chelsea save.
Right.
So kind of inspired by the events of our broken Chelsea save. I've got a list in front of me. I've got a list of football players who have all, at some point during their career, played over 100 competitive games for Chelsea Football Club. And what I'm going to do is we are going to move through them nationality by nationality. And I'm going to give you a nationality, and I'm going to ask for one player from each of you of that nationality that has played over 100 times for Chelsea. They get harder as it goes on. So I'm starting out some very, very friendly ones, and then they start to get a little bit trickier as it goes on. But I thought it'd be just nice little bit of fun. Just to
don't worry, viewers and listeners. We'll be out of here in about 3 minutes' time. It'll be fine. Go for it, Rich.
This won't take long at all. Right then. So we're going to start. Would anybody like to go first? Or any preferences from either of you?
Yeah, if I don't go first, I'm not sure I'll be able to answer any of them. We'll see.
Right then, here we go. So we're going to start. Kev and then Jeb, I would like you to name for me a player who has played over 100 times competitively for Chelsea, who is Spanish.
Azpilicueta.
Cesar Azpilicueta is correct. 508 appearances. Jeb.
Cesc Fabregas.
Cesc Fabregas, 198 appearances. Congratulations. You have successfully Spained. Next country on the list. Kev, please name me a French footballer that has appeared over 100 times for Chelsea.
It's probably... There's at least two, unless he's being really mean.
No, there's a few.
Pick one. Let's go Desailly.
Marcel Desailly, 222 appearances.
Good old Jeb. Marcus.
Claude Makélélé.
Makélélé, 217 appearances. Nice. Next on the list, I would like you to name me a Brazilian that has played over 100 times for Chelsea.
I'm sure you would.
I'd love it. Nothing would make me happier.
They're probably really obvious. Not my answer yet. I don't see Thiago's Silva isn't there yet, possibly. I don't know if he is. Who else would there be? Why is my mind go back? I'm going to have to go with Silva because I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head at the moment.
Thiago Silva has played 128 games for Chelsea so far.
I'll take it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was surprised by that one. In my head, it feels like he's only been there 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No, he's been there a little while now.
Okay.
Jeb, got a Brazilian?
That's a bit rude. Right.
But good night, everybody.
Exactly. The guy who's still not escaped China, Oscar. Remember him?
Oscar.
Yeah.
He's still there. Yes. Still in China.
He is still in China, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the only one.
He's pretty much the only one now. Hasn't got a Chinese passport yet because he'd already played too many games internationally for Brazil before he went. But, 203 games he managed for Chelsea in the end, which, again, feels like a lot.
He was very good.
He was really good, wasn't he? He was ever so good. But he's still out there securing that bag in China. Right then, Spain, France, Brazil are done. Next on the list, I would like you to name me a German with over 100 appearances for Chelsea. Kev, we'll start with you.
I'm sure you would. A German. Again, what I know of how these things work is that 90% of our listeners are going, well, it's obvious. It's him. Just say him for good. And I'm going, have there ever been a German playing for Chelsea? A German. Can't think of any there. Ooh. I am genuinely really, really struggling.
I've put Germany in here for context, Kev. There aren't loads of them, but the ones that are there are
big,
fairly well known.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
Just to make you feel worse about not being able to think
Thank
of one.
Thank you ever benefit. So
yeah,
much.
Yeah, no worries, mate. No worries.
He didn't.
I'm going to push you for an answer, I'm afraid.
I really, really don't know. And that is really, really annoying because I know that when you say, I'm going to know. I'll wave the white flag. My mind goes blank on these things and I cannot Fair think enough. Of a single one.
It's easily done. Trust me. It's really easily done. Jeb, have you got any Germans for the win?
Kai Havertz.
And Kai Havertz.
Yeah. Rudiger. Mm-hmm. Balak.
Yeah, of course.
And maybe Schürrle. Maybe. I don't know if he played enough.
Schürrle didn't manage it. Yeah. But the other three are the only three. There we go.
This is why I hate quizzes, because in these contexts, because my mind literally does that thing of there's loads. You know there's loads. Come on. You watch lots of it. You know there's loads. And my mind goes,
See, again, I wouldn't have gone to Kai Havertz. I didn't think Kai Havertz was there long enough, but he was, of those three, Havertz was...
I should have got Michael Ballack. That's the one I should have got, just because of
139
the era
for Havertz. But then again, Ballack...
But it Ballack felt like was Ballack only a few seasons, yeah.
166 Ballack managed in the end. It's crazy. And then there we go. There were some trickier ones coming up, like the Ivory Coast, because there's one obvious one, and there's one less obvious one.
Kalou.
Kalou is the less obvious one.
Yeah, I would have got both of those.
There you go. Belgium. See, there were a couple for Belgium.
Yeah, Hazard.
Yeah, Hazard and Courtois.
Germany was going to be my sticking point, wasn't it? For whatever reason, Germany I could probably do all the other ones.
Germany was the one. There we go. And then I was going to go down to the individual countries, like Yugoslavia. If you'd got Yugoslavia, I think I would have just retired.
Yep, I wouldn't have.
No, I'm not even going to try the pronunciation. It's difficult. Vowels, lots of vowels. I'm scared of them. Lovely. Well, thanks for
ruining my Sunday, Rich.
Anytime, mate, anytime. It's just what I do. It's who I am as a person. Right then, lads. I think, I don't know about the two of you, but I reckon that's probably a podcast.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Yeah. There we go. Lovely. Sure. Brilliant. Sure. Sure. Makes sure. sense. Feels right, doesn't it? Before we go, before we leave, Jeb, where can the people find you making the Football Manager content and ticking off all those objectives you have with Morecambe?
I've been doing Network Save on Wednesday, but then I've got to go to the Isle of Man for important international pool business. Yes. Sadly not swimming pools either, the pub swap. Anyway, so unfortunately I'm not going to be on too much, but I'll do a pick out. I think we might have shouted it before, but Salty BFM, he's doing a Wonder Kid United.
He is.
And genuinely, me and Rich went in separately and both picked out a Wonder Kid, and we both picked out a Wonder Kid from Digiboity. because it's a funny country name.
It's a funny sounding country.
We both pick strikers. They're slightly different though. Mine's 6'8" and weighs 130 kilos. Rich's is 5'3" and actually only weighs 100 kilos, so it's similar weights, but yeah. And we've already combined. There's the big man, little man, but it's the other way around. The little man fed the big man, so there we are.
Exactly. Yeah, we are thriving. Two greatest Djiboutian strikers in footballing history already.
But I think he has a squad of 60 Wonder Kids, which is going to be an issue. I think I'm quite excited to where it is in March. Like where will we be? Because we weren't the starting strikers, which is an absolute travesty.
It's disgusting.
I heard there's a new signing as well. Like some new combative, angry midfielder joined.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Our colleague Kev, he's in.
Kev's in the squad. I had a conversation with Salty B and decided that I needed to finally out myself as the aggressive person that I actually am within. So I asked him to make myself a combative midfielder that with the highest aggression that he can find and lots of arguments with the referees and all that kind of stuff, because it's just my natural personality. So yes, I am in and looking forward to the journey ahead.
Exactly. Kev makes Roy Keane look like a pacifist.
He's so angry. Obviously.
So, totally. So angry. Exactly. Kev, if people would like to watch you just getting angry at referees or, rolling in the aisles, where can they find you doing that, pal?
So you can find me at the United City FM every weekday afternoon, 3 till 5 p.m. over on Twitch on the British Isles Journeyman series Rolling in the Isles. This week, just in case anybody's listening to this on the Monday morning as a patron, I won't be there Monday afternoon. I've got a family funeral that we're going to, so that's going to be my Monday. So I will be back on Tuesday afternoon, all being well, and we will progress from there and see where my Hampton and Richmond side go from where we started, which has been inconsistent but fun nonetheless.
Absolutely. Again, looking forward to seeing how that journey progresses over the course of the year. You can find me twitch.tv/RichOwensFM. I'll be network gaming this week. I will be What's the Story former glorying over in the J League, which definitely works completely normally this year. I've signed Quagliarella. He's 39, and he's already predicted to be the top goal scorer in the league by some considerable distance. So Quagzilla's going to tear up the J-League for me, and it's going to be brilliant. Also, a little shout-out to our colleague and our friend, Y Callum, who's doing the YouTubes at the moment. He has started his Atletico Bill Slough journey. He's got one stream in, which is an incredibly difficult thing to do with a baby in the house. I can speak from personal experience. But he's also recording some content for YouTube as well. So please do make sure you check that out. I believe it's just youtube.com/YCallum. We'll have the links in the descriptions and all the other bits and pieces linked under this episode. So please go over there, give it a watch, drop him a like, tell him Football Manager Therapy sent you, and he won't care. Views at the end of that's all he's interested in. Views, he just likes numbers. That's all he really cares about. We think he's nice, but just deep down he just cares about engagement on social media. He doesn't. He's lovely and we miss him. There we go. Do that. Go watch Callum, have a nice time. Watch me, watch Kev, watch Jeb, hang out with us this week. It's going to be good. But in the meantime, thank you very much for hanging out with us today and listening to another episode of Football Manager Therapy. We appreciate you enormously, and we will see you on the next one. Take care. Love you lots. Bye-bye.